Welcome back to another edition of Sideline Sessions with Wesley Sykes. I am, of course, Wesley Sykes, the managing editor of Coach and Athletic Director, Training and Conditioning, and Winning Hoops Brands for Great American Media Services. And you can listen to all of our previous episodes anywhere you can access podcasts, as well as any of our websites. That's coachad.com, training-conditioning.com, and winninghoops.com. And be sure to follow all of our brands on Twitter as well. That's coach_AD, at train condition, at winning hoops, and myself, if you'd like. That's at Wesley Sykes _. And just one quick housekeeping note as we close out the year. For those in the sports medicine profession looking to earn some CEUs, Training Conditioning does offer opportunities to earn those CEUs through reading our digital edition of each issue, then taking a short quiz on what you read. Wow. Simply select the continuing education tab on training-conditioning.com and follow the connecting link to get started. Now, with that out of the way, we welcome to the program Sam Schilling, offensive coordinator at Greater New Bedford Vocational Regional High School in Massachusetts. Thanks very much for coming to the program, Sam. How are you?
Hey, doing pretty well. Thanks for having me, Wes.
All right. So now I understand the Bears and yourself just wrapped up another season in the MIAA conference and had an appearance in the large school vocational state final. Is that correct?
Yeah. So it was our first time back there since 2012. So we had a nice season. The championship game didn't go the way we wanted. Had kind of a, you know, we're playing into December, unseasonably cold. So, you know, just good learning experience, but, you know, proud of the guys getting there. And yeah, just learned a ton. It was my first, called plays at the JV level. Mm-hmm. I was kind of the pass game coordinator last year. So it was first time taking over, being the primary play caller. So, you know, just learned a ton and yeah, happy to chat about it.
Yeah, and I think that's great. So you mentioned a little bit about your coaching background in football. Get into the, because I believe you started at a prep school right in Massachusetts as well, at Tabor Academy, before shifting over a few towns over to Greater New Bedford.
Yeah, so I had coached, after college, I kind of got into coaching lacrosse. Mm-hmm. So I was doing that, really enjoying it. But I was coaching in kind of urban districts where it was really hard to get kids to come out. Kind of new to the sport. So, you know, really love being out there, but football's always been a passion of mine. Played in college, and as I kind of took some time away, I had been following pretty closely. I'd always had like really in-depth interests in certain coaches, and Chip Kelly's career I had followed really closely. Mm-hmm. And then got really into kind of Mike Leach and the air raid kind of coaching tree. So as I did that, I'd love to, right now I'm not coaching lacrosse, but I think, anytime you can use kind of football to recruit for you, just because it is, football is just such a popular sport. So it's kind of through an interesting way, but I've always been kind of a student of the game. And circled back, and now I'm with a great young head coach who's really just an awesome guy, and just a nice coaching staff kind of ready to take input and just, you know, got a great team. We started out with like, I think 140 guys tried out. Mm-hmm. So there's just a ton of interest. We had a, you know, full freshman. I think there was, 75 guys on the freshman level. So, you know, it's just great, a great issue to have where, you know, I was coming from a lacrosse teams where I was finishing the season with, 18 guys were having to cancel JV games and all that. So it's just, it's awesome. It's great. That's what you want. And they're eager to learn. And, it's a great spot to be in.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the Mike Leach, the Chip Kellys of the world, so I love that kind of passing background here. But of course, in Massachusetts, particularly high school football, right, you're going to have a little bit of that ground game as well. I know you like to call a lot of plays from the booth, and that seems to be a trend with a lot of offensive coordinators, no matter what level you see at all. So I'm kind of interested from an offensive coordinator's point of view, what are the advantages of calling the play from the booth versus on the ground, and have you done both, and what feels comfortable for you?
Yeah, so it was interesting. My first experience with play calling was at the JV level at this private school, and they play in the it was Tabor Academy, and they play in the independent school league. Mm-hmm. So they actually they're kind of a throwback. They produce quite a bit of talent. There's actually, we played against Zach Zinter from Buckingham Brown and Nichols, who's now like the starting right guard for Michigan, you know, heading to the college football playoffs. So right. they've got, you know, there's a ton of talent there, but they have some like real throwback rules. So they don't even have, they don't have any booth.
Oh, access. No kidding.
Like no coaching. There's no headsets. It's just very interesting. It's kind of throwback in that way. Mm-hmm. So I had no real experience with the booth. Obviously you'd see the, you know, the cut ups at the end and the game film and kind of pick up on a whole bunch of stuff. And again, those coaches get really good at kind of noticing different things. And again, it's figuring out which players are going to be kind of accurate reporters and tell you what's going on.
Sure.
So this year, the first two games of the season, started calling it from the sideline and was just having a hard time picking up on exactly what other defenses were doing, you know, especially you kind of come in with a sense of, you know, you try to predict what teams are going to do, how they're going to play you. But again, until you can kind of see it and see what they're doing, it's tough to do. And you're relying on, you know, an assistant coach in the booth, but again, they aren't seeing it. And again, as a young offensive coordinator, I think I'm still learning what questions I even want to ask that, you know, exactly what I want to see. Cause I want to get to the point where I can say, you know, I want to know, you know, what alignment the D line's in, where those overhang players are going, how quickly, you know, where the linebackers are playing off the ball, all those things. But, you know, right now I'm still developing that. So we started to have significantly more success kind of once I moved up to the booth, was kind of able to pick up on some of that stuff a little bit quicker. Because again, it's just on the sideline, so much is happening. And then when you're calling the play in and we're still, you know, having the quarterback, you know, jog over and take the play from you and all that. So there's definitely a ton of just like small, you know, tweaks you can do. But what I found is just being in the booth is it's just a lot easier to pick up on those alignments, see how teams are playing, you see what they're doing, see who's flashing at different levels of the defense, where they're playing you depth wise. And again, the far side of the field is, it's really hard to tell exactly what they're doing when you're, you know, play, you know, the field level
on the ground. Sure.
Yeah. So again, going back, I think the guys that are able to call it from the field, they're relying on kind of like assistant coaches that they've had in their system for so long that they've coached them up to the point where they can very quickly and concisely, you know, relay what the defense is doing. And I think that's kind of the next levels where I can get a young coach that sees the game exactly as I see it and kind of knows what I'm looking for.
Well, and that's what I find interesting too, because like you see it so much in memes and on the internet there on College Football Saturdays when teams are on the sidelines, they're holding up different play cards and there are all these different photos and different things, right? And it's kind of funny sometimes, but it's a great way to kind of communicate and get the play call from the sidelines, especially if you're in opposing territory with loud fan bases and that sort of thing. But I think also from that standpoint of working up from the booth, getting the play call down to the sideline and then into the huddle is something that you kind of have to worry about, right? Especially with play clocks and make sure you have the substitutions and everything. So, you know, as a young coach, I'm kind of interested in how you did that this year. And maybe now that the season's over, you know, how do you think you can kind of become more efficient on that?
Yeah. So right now we were doing, so we went from when I was my first year with this program, you know, they were relaying the whole call. So again, it's, formation and then, you know, play call. And we have a number associated with it. You know, the first digit is either the ball carrier that's going to get the ball and then, or whether it's a pass or a run and what protection. So there's a lot of things to relay and then the name of the play. And then the second number, you know, indicates which right or left, you know? So it was kind of a mouthful. And so the way we simplified it was I would call the play down to the running backs coach, who would, you know, tell the quarterback just the formation and then a number associated with it. So we ended up having, you know, anywhere from, depending on the week, 50 to 60 numbers with individual plays, you know, with the direction and then the name. So it got pretty tight. You know, we'd like to get to the point where, you know, we can signal in those plays, whether through signs. Again, a lot of it, again, that's kind of my homework assignment for the off season, is to really dive into some of that sideline communication. But again, a lot of those cards, you know, there's a ton of dummy signals on there. So it's hard to I think the signaling system is quite straightforward. It's just there's a lot of bells and whistles to kind of confuse the other team. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, you can kind of outthink yourself sometimes or overthink yourself on the sideline communication, just because the defense is so concerned about getting their signal in. As long as you can block it, the real concern would be if you are facing the film, and over time, mm-hmm. if you're getting filmed and teams can match up your signal over time. But,
right.
As long as you can avoid that, it's like you don't have to be overly complex. And again, we have being in our district, we've got a ton of like skill guys. So we can also experiment with, bringing the plays, kind of mm-hmm. having messenger wide receivers that rotate in. Again, that allows the defense to sub if they want. But at this level, most teams we're playing, if they're subbing, that's probably, an advantage to us, because most teams are playing their best 11 to begin with, and depth is not always the strongest,
Well, especially when you have 140 people rolling out there, right? Depth might be a stronger suit in your card there. But, mentioned kind of being able to sub in different players and having different skill sets and different things, and it kind of brings up to my next question of this idea of having a diverse playbook, maybe a formation for every play or formation, an answer for every defense that you play. Versus the ability to do multiple things out of the same formation and maybe play with certain wrinkles. Do you kind of combat that? And again, maybe not having so much paralysis by analysis, so to speak.
Yeah. So this year, and again, as being a Chip Kelly, Mike Leach guy, those guys are mm-hmm. kind of renowned. Chip's gone more towards like some, heavier packages with more tight ends, but he was kind of classically 11 personnel, and Mike mm-hmm. Leach is almost exclusively 10 personnel with a couple 20 personnel, so it's either one back with four wide or two backs. So again, it's kind of being simpler personnel wise and formationally, and then being able to hit every point of the field. So what we ended up doing is we ran a lot of pistol this year with like a sidecar, kind of a fullback. So that allowed us to run to the strength. We could run ISO, we could run toss, or what we called a QB follow, which was basically like a QB kind of lead, just off tackle with both mm-hmm. the fullback and the halfback leading. So those were kind of our, downhill run game with ISO, intermediate with the QB follow, and then the quick hitter outside, just to make sure that they were, honoring our speed and making sure that their overhang, whether it be an outside linebacker or a walked up safety, wasn't getting too involved in what was going on in the box. And then backside, we can run, just a kind of an ISO the other way. And then we can run counter, and then we would like to run speed. We run speed option off the backside quite a bit. So that was like a way for us to we can hit all facets with our run game. We can hit everywhere and kind of keep the defense honest. Again, we ran into a lot of teams that initially the counter, once we kind of introduced that, was really mm-hmm. killing teams. But then a lot of teams started loading up to the weak side. So then toss became kind of, for our last two or three games, we just hit a ton of stuff on toss. And again, we like to be a little bit more vanilla rather than adding a play for every situation, or anytime mm-hmm. you scout a team, you're always seeing things like, oh, this could work. But rather than tailoring a new play for what you think would work, I would rather try to fit it into what we've already done. And then what we saw, especially with the counter, and then what we called it the G power, but it was just like the pulling backside guard with then the fullback being replacing for what the backside tackle would do. So instead of being, they call it a GT counter, guard tackle power or guard tackle counter, it would be like a guard fullback counter. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
So what we saw is just that the more times the guards ran it and the tackles ran it, because again, the second man through, we're trying to kick out that end. And again, most high school teams, those ends are really undisciplined. So they're just flying up the field. They're trying to make a big play in the backfield. They're, anticipating maybe a pass. They're flying up. So that mm-hmm. guard comes out, and that block was pretty simple. He all he has to do is really kick him out. And oftentimes he's just tagging him. He doesn't really need to blow him up. The second guy through, whether it be the tackle on counter or that fullback, like he's got to kind of have his head on a swivel and figure out, and that picture's changing, and whether they were blitzing or doing something mm-hmm. else or what's going on. So the more times we ran it, the better we got. you know, and then we started seeing teams that did coach up that defensive end that, you know, they were coming downhill and trying to wrong shoulder it or get underneath it. And because we had run it so much, the guard's role was a little bit different, but then that fullback or tackle was able to kind of adjust. So I think that was the beauty. And again, that is, even though, you know, Mike Leach is renowned for the air raid and, you know, leading the NCAA with pass attempts and hardly ever running the ball. One of his big things, though, is, you know, you rep it. So when the picture changes, you have a natural adjustment to it. And so I think that's what we really did of just kind of being consistent and making sure they saw it, whether it was an odd man, three man front or an even four man front, or they were bringing mm-hmm. pressure. We were kind of able to have answers for all of that. And then to the front side, that toss play, I know a lot of people, you know, saw in that Buffalo Bills game,
it was right.
a great run by Damian Harris, but you know, that's an outside hitting play that for us, that would have been 29 toss. But again, he sees that they over pursue and he's able to cut that back. So the more that our running backs, you know, one of our running backs in our semifinal game had, you know, just an unbelievable stat line. He's a phenomenal kid, but he had 6 carries for 250 yards.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, it was just a beast. But you know, I think 3 of those were on tosses that he kind of saw the defense over pursuing and then cut it back. So again, but that only happens because we've run toss so much that they see,
mm-hmm.
They can recognize over pursuit. So, I mean, that's kind of the biggest thing is you want to be able to keep the defense accountable out of any formation. And then the only problem I had is the more you add, again, most of our guys are 2-way guys. So I'm only getting really, you know, Monday's kind of film and a light kind of introduction, Tuesday sure. offensive day, and then Thursday, you know, defense, Wednesday we'll get maybe 15 to 20 plays of offense just to stay sharp. And then Thursday we're getting into kind of what we call our perfect practice, kind of our pregame.
Mm-hmm.
So you really don't have as much time as you'd like. You know, when you get to the college level, you've got your offensive and defensive platoon. So I think for me, a big thing is be a little simpler with your personnel and formation and allow the guys to see things. So as that picture changes, they can adjust. I mean, that was a classic, you know, you'd have a guy ask you, says, well, who do I pick up on this play? And it's, you know, the classic, you know, answer is just, well, we can't control what the defense does at the snap of the ball. So you just have to be in the right in this spot. And then you make a decision. And, you know, initially kids kind of look at me wide eyed, but as they see it and they see it and they see it, they're able to make those decisions, you know? So that's really satisfying. And I enjoy it. I enjoy that part of it.
Well, yeah. And I love all that. And again, just kind of getting down to the nitty gritty there. So I really appreciate that answer. And when you talk about having that diverse playbook and kind of breaking it down, those concepts to your student athletes, and again, maybe only having them for X amount of plays throughout certain, you know, during the practice week there, you know, how do you go about explaining, you know, not just the running concepts as you were before, but maybe the passing concepts to your players at that high school level where it may not be, you know, that's maybe more raw, undeveloped skills you're dealing with.
Yeah, so our pass game was definitely not as far advanced as our run game. And again, we had a couple running backs that were really talented, and our quarterback was just a really great athlete in the open field. He was just, you know, pretty electric runner, had some great moves, and we were able to take advantage. And again, we play in an interesting league where it's still a lot of kind of like triple option teams, and then what a lot of teams try to do is kind of bully us, you know, so bring 7-8 guys in the box. So for our pass concepts is when what we ended up having more success on was a lot of, you know, a lot of vertical stuff where we were just kind of throwing it up. You know, they try to press us on the outside. They have a single high safety, you know, playing center field that really can't get over the top. So we would live with, you know, taking that shot, that whole shot, you know, 25 yards down the field towards the sideline and, you know, either trying to draw a pass interference or giving our guys a chance for a jump ball. We had a real, real talented receiver who played the Z. So for us, that was on the right side.
Made a Sports Center top 10 play, if I'm not mistaken, this season.
Yeah, that definitely. Yeah, that was a highlight. Yeah, he made it to the You Got Mossed. So
that's
that was
it. Right.
Pretty special. Yeah, and he's, I think he could have a good career, maybe bulk up, play a little tight end, but just he's got phenomenal. He's got Division I hands. He can catch anything. He's very, very smooth operator. So So yeah, for the pass game, again, like a lot of teams are bringing pressure. So we ended up probably what we had the most success on was kind of like we would do like a 7-man protection, which again, that's very different than kind of a Mike Leach offense where he's trying to get five guys in that pass route every single time. But again, I think that'll come with time. What I'm excited for is hopefully having continuity. So kids are kind of seeing stuff because again, the classic, you know, we don't want at this level quarterbacks, you know, unless you're really lucky or you've got a kid that's really, you know, bought in, it's hard to do kind of the full field reads. So what we're trying to do is pre-snap, you know, we got our front side, which is usually, you know, a 3-man route combination where really we're just reading. We're not too worried about that safety when they're in a single high look. He's most likely not going to be too involved unless we're running a post or something like that. So we're really reading the depth of that cornerback, whether he drops and then what that outside linebacker overhang guy does. And we want to put our guys in position, whether through a levels, so having a vertical, an intermediate out, something like that. And then somebody working to the flat. And we want our quarterback really just to get eyes on those two guys. And again, not stare them down, but just see where they're floating to and then put it in a good position. So we want to have answers. But again, we got to protect the quarterback. The first year when I was doing the passing game, I was trying to get five guys out, but we weren't getting it out quick enough. And again, I'm hoping that as this quarterback I only had, for these two years, which was really an abbreviated season because we had the COVID year.
Right.
So I'm hoping as they see it, you know, the more reps that they get, the more they'll be able to kind of decipher and get it out quick. And then always know that, oh, but if we're singled up on the backside, we'll live with, you know, whether it be a slant hitch, speed out, something like that. So yeah, the pass game is going to take a little bit more work.
On the whole in Massachusetts, even, you know, maybe when you get up to the Division I level there, maybe Division II with some schools there, the emphasis is still on the ground game and running the ball there. You know, I think for the majority of the state, like you mentioned, I would say in the conference, and I would say the case for most of the MIAA, from what I've seen, it's usually a smash mouth type of football.
Yeah,
you don't see too many guys throwing for 300 yards.
No. You're seeing it. It's interesting. We ended up playing a couple of vocational teams up in like the North Shore. So one from Haverhill, and then, you know, and you end up watching their one from Marlboro, which is more Metro West. But,
sure.
You know, you start seeing these teams, and it's interesting because there's little pockets of it. Like we played a team that was all – their offensive line was all in two-point stances, you know, which is very much like kind of a pro-style thing. And I think there's little pockets of the throwing game, but – you know, if you have a team that's firing out and it's just playing with great intensity, you know, that's probably the way to go. And again, the whole triple option thing, I mean, is it's just a really smart way to play football, you know, and it's and you get the kids bought in. And I know locally we've, you know, Fairhaven has done a phenomenal job turning around their program in very short order with a really phenomenal coach in Derek Almeida. And he run a handful of plays, maybe a few more than that. They'll catch you off guard and go vertical in the pass game, but they fire off low, they play tough, and then they hit you with that rocket toss if you're trying to load up in the box, and then, you know, they'll just bang you with that fullback. So it's cool. Yeah. And it's just what you can recruit to and what your kids are looking to do, you know? So
Well, okay, so you have your first year completed here as a first year play caller, I should say, completed here. Now, what do you have? What's on your checklist to get better, maybe personally, and then within yourself, you know, maybe as an exit survey with their coaching staff? You know, what's the head coach say, hey, I want you to kind of do this more a little bit this year?
Well, I think the sideline communication for sure, trying to get that playing a little bit quicker. What we ended up doing, and part of it was because some of the games were really explosive, but we didn't run as many plays as we'd like, you know? So part of that is being able to signal it in a little bit quicker, get that moving, you know, and then also sustaining drives, which is another issue against some of the better teams early in the season. We just, you know, we got bullied a little bit. So again, I think we're pretty satisfied with the run game. But being able to teach it, you know, rep it, figure out practice strategies. One of the big things was figuring out for our, you know, making more of the repetition based stuff, making it a little bit more game like. So getting more usable reps for those quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So they're seeing exactly, rather than just running, you know, routes on air or, you know, we run pat and go and settle and deuce and just kind of these drills that really work on, you know, catching and throwing the football, those mechanics, but sprinkling in some stuff where they're actually having to do those, you know, those two person reads or reading space. And again, you know, throw into green grass. So even when we do throw, we're not as worried about, you know, turnovers, which is really the big bugaboo and what makes a lot of head coaches hesitant to throw the football. So I think that's a big piece. And then obviously I would like to be a little more, you know, varied in what we're doing formationally. And I would like to get to the point where, you know, I do like the 10 personnel, which again, mm-hmm. we were mostly in 20 for most of the year. And then we also had a set that was a little more 11 personnel with more of an H-back. So it'd be fun to get more into that, you know, 10 personnel look, work on a little pass protection, I think is always a big piece. But again, just figuring out, it's more just, you know, tightening up practice as much as possible and figuring out which drills are we doing that are bearing fruit and which drills are we doing that, you know, maybe we should do a little bit less of or teach it in just a slightly different way. So I think those are kind of the big things, but most tangibly for me is, you know, that sideline communication bit and, you know, just making sure we're all on the same page. But again, it's good to have a break, but you look forward to that off season of now having a season under your belt. 'Cause I came in thinking we were going to run a lot of like split zone with a SIF block and all mm-hmm. things like that. And now it's, you know, we're pretty primarily outside of the toss, which is kind of an outside zone play. You know, we're mostly gap scheme. And I think we're going to, you know, stick with that for now and just figure out ways of really teaching it, really repping it. And then I would like to incorporate some of the younger guys better, you know, figuring mm-hmm. out when we can get more reps for the JV guys. 'Cause I think that's when really kids start to see it. And there's nothing better than when you have a kid, you know, come off the sideline or in practice asking a really high level question, you know, that's when you're like, oh, we're not coaching the simple stuff anymore. Now we're, mm-hmm. you know,
it makes it fun for you. Yeah, no, right. Yeah. I get that. And it's interesting that you said, again, just kind of talking about being more efficient, right? Whether it's getting that play call in or maximizing those practice reps that you have and that practice time that you have too. I mean, that seems to be the big thing when I've talked to coaches or even strength coaches is about maximizing that practice period, because it takes a lot to get, you know, in your case, 140 kids or however many kids are on the varsity roster together in one room doing a multiple group of exercises where you don't have complete oversight. So it takes faith and efficiency in communicating from the head coach to the rest of the coaching staff to make sure they're doing, you know, their responsibilities at each station and make sure, you know, they're teaching the right things. And that's all moving in a proper way, because it's funny, because it's like you hear the well-oiled machine cliche all the time, but it really is. And once everything starts moving like that, that's when you start seeing the progresses. But you have a slip up in one of those stations, then the whole practice gets held up for the rest of the time.
Yeah, no, it was a couple early in the season. We saw Dartmouth. We hosted like a half game jamboree kind of scrimmage type thing, and watching. They've got one of the Rick White, who's a, you know, phenomenal coach, has had a ton of talent. And my the head coach, Justin Cruz, who I work for, is kind of off of his coaching tree. But to watch their pregame, you know, you've got guys, I think I'm sure they might have a young coach on there, but they've probably got five coaches of, you know, five of the six or four of the five who've been there for over 10 years. Mm-hmm. So it's just, they go from station to station and every position just knows exactly what to do. And they're just, it, like you said, a well-oiled machine is like really, really impressive. But that's the best thing. 'Cause again, it's so much of this is muscle memory. And if you're, you know, you'd rather, you know, clear heads, you know, fast legs is like a big, you know, aphorism that people use of like, you, if you know exactly what you're doing, you're going to play that much faster versus having to second guess yourself or get concerned or, you know, and it's, let's just get to the point where we're not going to run the most plays. We're not going to input, you know, five new plays every week, but the plays that we do have, we're, you know, we're going to be really tough to tackle on those because we're going to play it, you know, really, really hard. So yeah, I totally totally agree with that. You know, it's like, how do you tighten it up? And then the kids, I think, pick up on that too, of, you know, this means something and time on task and what are we doing? And I'd rather, you know, rather have a really tight practice for an hour and 45 minutes than everybody standing around and, you know, doing things for, you know, an hour longer than that.
Right. Yeah. No, and I love it. And again, it's that progression from year one to year two, where I think you were kind of hitting on it before, where you have that foundation, you have a little bit more of a direction of where you want to go as a team and maybe what your identity is as a team and what works for you. And then you're able to say, okay, let's hammer these drills home or these plays or whatever that is in that instance. And then let's see where we can offshoot from there, you know, and that's going to be our main route and we'll see what other limbs branch off from there. I like that.
Yeah. There's no shortage of like good ideas out there. Like, I mean, you can just turn on, you know, bowl season is coming up. You're going to see all these neat, you know, schemes and different things. But I think you really get good is when you decide like, okay, this is kind of going to be my identity. It can slightly evolve around the edges, but how am I going to teach? How am I going to teach this and teach it in a really, you know, a way that a lot of kids can understand. And then, you know, allowing the kids to kind of showcase their talent. Cause that's really right. What it's about, you know, playing to your talent.
Yep. Absolutely. Well, hey, I want to be cognizant of your time, my time, everyone's time here. So I know we're running right up on 30 minutes. So I want to thank you for taking out the time here today, Sam. I wish you the best of luck in year two of the play calling. But, you know, maybe where can some of the people get in touch with you or the greater New Bedford Bears if they want to follow along this season?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you can just Google us. It's one of the longer names that I know, but GNBVT, you know, athletics. You can find us on Twitter. You know, also just pop in. I've got school, you know, I'm in the school directory, you know, so you can find me there or Coach Cruz. But yeah, be happy to chat with anybody, you know, interested in, you know, talking ball, anything like that. And I appreciate you having me on. It's always great to catch up.
I love it. Yes. Yeah, so get the Coach Leach stands unite all together, right? Just have a big group together and everyone can just kind of share about the air raid.
Definitely.
All right. Well, again, I appreciate the time and I want to shout out first all of our Twitter brands before we leave here. So you can follow all of our brands on Twitter. That's @coach_AD, @traincondition, and @winninghoops, and myself as always, if you like, that's @WesleySykes_. And you want to be following those accounts to get a first look at who our next guest will be. But until then, sports fans, I'm Wesley Sykes. And thank you very much for listening to another edition of Sideline Sessions. And thank you, Sam.
All right. Awesome. Thanks, Wes.